Today's episode is brought to you by the Vegas Beer Guys.
The Everything Sequel podcast contains explicit language, and I will not go to my room. Hello and welcome to the Everything Sequel podcast. This is an Oceans edition. Today, we rank the Oceans movies. My name is Michael Schantz of the How Dare You Awards. Joining me, the man, the myth, the legend, the man with the plan, Tom Stewart of Lonesome Whistle Productions. Say hi, Tom.
Who has got my bloody money?
Fantastic.
There's Eddie Izzard there.
So I like that you started
referencing.
I like that you started with him because you. I think you even already intimated on the show that you're not a fan. And
no. Well, let me put it in context, right? Okay. So that's Eddie Izzard referencing both the Italian Job, totally appropriate reference for this kind of movie, but he's also referencing his own stand-up routine. In the show Definite Article, in which he recreates that scene, I think once with mice and then a second time in French. So, as a stand-up comedian, he's sort of one of the best, one of the goats.
Mm-hmm.
But the man is the kiss of death when it comes to cinema.
Now, is that how you feel about his performance even in these movies?
Well, we'll see, won't we? But right. I just want to point out, The Avengers. No, not that Avengers. My superhero, the girlfriend, or whatever that movie's called. The Uma Thurman superhero.
My super ex-girlfriend.
There you go.
Yeah.
my girlfriend, the superhero, sounds like a Gerard Depardieu film. And what's the other one? The Secret Agent with Bob Hoskins. Ever heard of that? No.
No.
Because he's in it.
Yeah, but you can't make that argument for the Oceans movies. These movies did well.
Did they? Define well.
They made money.
Okay,
they
made
money. But you know what I think is funny is that what I remember is you, I can't even remember what we were talking about, but you asking which of these movies is Izzard in?
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, I think it's 13. And I totally forgot that he's in both.
Yeah, well, my sense was he was in one, but not. Both of the first run of sequels, shall we call it? I'm just going to cut to the chase here. This is an abnormal film series.
Okay. Tell me why.
Well, you've got the 1960 original, which spawned no sequels.
Right, and this is different for us, right?
Yeah, and we have a reboot decades later, which became a trilogy. And was then followed by a gender-flipped spin-off movie.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't normal.
No.
For film series.
We have had, you know, like if you take the Halloween series. So we have had remakes that kind of turned into new series before.
That's correct. But they were, the original always had a set of sequels before the reboot. I don't know if we've ever followed a series where the reboot
is the only set of sequels.
Garners the sequels.
Yeah.
And the original, no one wants to do anything with that and those people. Except get together in Vegas the next summer and make
something entirely different.
Something entirely different, but equally awful.
Brat pack, schmat pack.
Yeah. So I don't know what to do with it. And it also, I mean, it made me think about the caper genre. The heist genre.
The heist, yeah.
which is a kind of a, it sort of subdivides into two different genres. It's either, because there's the kind of heist noir tradition, where it's like an offshoot of the film noir, like The Asphalt Jungle, The Killing, and then, you know, contemporary versions like Reservoir Dogs and The Usual Suspects.
Right.
But there's this other side, which comes more out of the comedy caper movie, the kind of the Pink Panther, Thomas Crown Affair, even to an extent, even though they're not kind of, they're more espionage films, like the Bond movies. And the
Look
Ocean's
at you
film.
Slipping that in.
Yeah, but you know, the Ocean's movies are firmly located in the second camp. You know, these are not, these are not existential post-war films. You know, they're very much, they're about having, they're about fun and style.
I was going to say that they do hook into this idea of style that I think is connected to the Brat Pack. The Brat Pack. That's my 1980s child-rearing days just coming, flowing from the mountain.
Well, we wouldn't have had a Brat
Fountain,
Pack without the Rat
me.
Pack.
Yeah, the Rat Pack. So they are, they do feel connected and hooked into that idea.
Completely, yeah. It's the kind of 1960s adventure caper. Took Cappy is another. Actually, Jules Dassin's movies are right on the precipice between the two, because he made Rififi, which is a heist noir, and he made Took Cappy, which is a heist caper.
Right.
So... it's just interesting that it made me think about how weird the heist genre is, and that it kind of comes from two totally different styles of filmmaking.
Right.
But this is very much in the latter camp.
Oh yeah.
And the, you're absolutely right. And the original was too.
Mm-hmm.
The original was part of that movement, I think.
Sure.
It may have even been one of the first, because it was 1960, which is earlier than the Pink Panther, the Bonds, the Thomas Crown Affair, Charade, which is another one.
Well, and it also started to make me think of, you know, it was a while ago when we first had our, we had a requel episode, because the Scream franchise was kind of in this, the midst, they had just started at the time, this reboot sequel kind of combination, and then I realized that Ocean's 8 is firmly in that vein, and we always kind of talk about, well, we got to keep an eye out for when was the first time that started happening, and this feels pretty early, doesn't it?
Well, 2018, right?
I hadn't
thought about it in that tradition, but I think you're right. So I mean, it's only a couple of years after the all-female Ghostbusters. That's
exactly
what was on my mind when I was watching.
Me too, totally.
And as a, but that was a failure. So, and did they just feel like, well, you know, we can do anything with the Ocean's formula. It doesn't matter that this idea does, you know, has historically has not worked.
Yeah, it's weird because obviously Ocean's 8, I think, is, it's certainly monetarily and critically, it was way more accepted than the Ghostbusters sequel. And when you take into account that it's called Ocean's 8, and it did make money, but it's just sort of sat in limbo. They didn't make any sequels. But it, considering that its title is Ocean's 8, it leads for, you know, if you have 9 and 10, it goes right into 11, 12, and 13.
Well,
it feels like they had that idea at the outset, but never followed up.
And we'll, you know, we'll get there in three episodes time, but the way that Ocean's 8 ends kind of makes a tacit decision to kind of move on with a new series. And so it's especially strange that they didn't follow up on that, because there's a way that they could have folded it back into the original franchise, by which I mean the reboot franchise,
Right,
you know, Bourne style, where mm-hmm. it's like, hey, let's do a spinoff with a different agent. Actually, no, Matt Damon wants to come back.
Yeah,
I could see exactly the same thing happening where George Clooney would be like, you know, I want a piece of that.
Sure.
I'm not going to let Sandra Bullock steal a movie from me again. Post-Gravity.
Just set me off into outer space.
Yeah. So yeah, it's an unusual series in a lot of ways, and I don't know how successfully caper movies translate to a film series as well. Because apart from the Pink Panther, and mm-hmm. you know, maybe the Bonds if you want to go there, and you know I do,
I know you do.
Probably history doesn't. You know, I feel like F. Murray Abraham in. Inside Llewyn Davis. You know, I'm not seeing a lot of sequel potential here. Because after you do it once, and if it's just superficial, it's just fun, it's just style, why do you want to see it again? I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm wrong about that. CSI went on for, what, 30 years with the
and spawned
the same thing
sequels
again and again.
Yeah.
And spawned sequels. So right. maybe I'm wrong about that, but it seems the least likely format to reproduce again and again for me.
Yeah, but I think we can have interesting conversations about what the original series chooses to do within that.
Hmm.
That I, you know, I'm interested because I even... Oh, yeah, it was a real roller coaster ride watching these movies again. I had a good time, and I'm really excited to talk to you about it because I had one thing happen to me when I originally saw them and went in with expectations based on that and had a total reversal of fortune, essentially, as I watched these movies that... I don't know. It deeply, deeply interested me, these movies and this series. I'm excited to talk to you.
I'm excited to find out what that is. You're at a disadvantage in that, as I have established on this podcast, I don't like fun. Okay, then we, you know, it's well established that I don't like fun. I don't like watching other people enjoy themselves. You know, I'd rather stay out of all of that. So
that doesn't interest me at all.
So I think my response to these movies is a little skewed because I really dig. And we've talked
grains
about this
against
on the podcast
your curmudgeonly
before.
Nature.
It does. And, and it also, I'm attracted to one side of these movies, which is the detail, right? Like I've talked about this before, the C-span of it all attracts me in a way it never has before, and where I am in my life now, and so I just want to get bogged down in the details that too often they want to skip over.
See, now I think it's interesting you say that because I got bogged down in the details on my original viewing of one of these movies that made me discount it. And I think I looked over some of those details for another movie. You know, in a way I realized I was doing at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, now I it's like I still see all of those little things. Some of them don't bother me as much. Some still bother me, but I ignore. I don't know. I mean, we'll get there, but there's lots to talk about.
There is, and I wish these movies were better at what they're trying to do along the lines of, again, another subgenre of the heist movie is the con movie, right? The sort of the movies that David Mamet made in the 80s and 90s, like House of Games, Spanish Prisoner, and
Heist.
They want to have the payoffs of those movies where it's revealed that, you know, what you thought was happening was something completely different, but they don't want to do the groundwork. And I'm I'm remiss to go back and rewatch these movies.
How little patience you have already.
But because I feel like if I went back and rewatched these movies, none of it would fit. None of it would track. I've already got notes speaking to how something they say in the first act of the movie doesn't pay off in the third, or is completely contradictory to what they do in the final act with the narrative twist. So yeah, it's that side of it is kind of frustrating, because they want to have the feel of that kind of movie, but they also don't want to do the storytelling work of it either.
Yeah, to a certain extent, I don't think they have the time for it.
Yeah, and the audience
actually just literally don't have the time for it, and then don't have the patience for it, because hey, we're focused on the fun.
Yeah,
and that matters more to these movies.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, and the idea of that you're sort of cheering on, you're cheering on their success, and that's why it's completely contrary to the noir version of this, where you're essentially waiting for each of them to die in turn. But yes, in the caper movie, not only do you want them to all survive, you want them all to survive and be successful. Whereas when you're watching a heist noir like The Asphalt Jungle, you know it's going to end with Sterling Hayden with less blood in him than a chicken. One of the greatest lines of any movie ever. But, you know, you want the Pink Panther to get away with the diamonds. To some
extent.
Oh,
I think we're going to fight. I don't like your dismissive tone.
There's no dismissing. You're very quick to dismiss. Don't dismiss.
I dismiss in an inappropriate manner in time, sir.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and then I think and as regards ranking and declaring, I think I'm going to be all over the map with this.
Was it hard?
It was surprising.
Hmm.
Some prejudices reaffirmed, others inverted, subverted.
Me too.
Yeah.
That's what I was talking about.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, this series never sits still. It never rests on its laurels. So you're probably going to feel strongly about one movie and less strongly about the others, I feel. I don't know.
You mean me personally, or?
I mean you in the general sense.
In the general sense, okay.
Yeah, second person you.
Yeah.
Because it's, yeah, they're, each movie takes a different track with, the say, essentially the same elements of the formula.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I don't know. It's so hard, because sometimes I feel like I'm ranking a crime rather than a movie. No. But sometimes I'm like, did they achieve their goals as criminals? I'm like, no, that's not what it's about. Did I enjoy the movie? Is this a good movie? That's a different question as to whether, you know, which of these heists is better than the other. Although there are several in the first sequel to choose from.
Yeah.
And only one in each subsequent movie. So, yeah, I'm interested to hear what you think. I'm interested to know what I think as well. Because
still,
I'm not sure I entirely
still
know.
Still twirling about in that brain pan?
Yeah, well, you know, it's hard when you arrive into the episode not knowing what the other person thinks, and you get that sinking feeling of, oh, I'm going to have to defend all this.
Sometimes we both start thinking, oh, shit. I thought we would agree, and now I'm all alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, in general terms, I'd say, and, you know, to speak to your dismissive characterization, this isn't one of the series where I'm going to be ranking from the top down. This isn't going to be a Friday the 13th, you know, which is the ultimate best of these movies.
Actually, I
very think, much going to be from the bottom up.
Yeah, I actually think I agree with that. With an asterisk, you know, because, I mean, we've talked about it before. I'm a pretty forgiving movie fan, and obviously I take into account just having a good time at the movie theaters. I don't take umbrage to it, as you seem to intimate that you are doing.
Just for those of you listening, I just want to point out that when Mike said umbrage, then he shook his fist in a comical 1930s fashion, and that was aimed solely at me.
Like a chimp in a cage about to throw his poop.
Yeah.
And then I'll also just state that a friend of the show, Matthew Aldrich, apparently has been very excited because he has mentioned to me at least two or three times that we should do this series.
Is that a setup, though? Is he setting us up a la...
I don't know.
A la what happens in these movies.
In these movies, yeah.
Where various people are set up. About half the team in every movie has no idea what's going on.
Yeah, right.
And yet, it's sort of like it's things are talked about in front of them that suggest they do know what's going on. but we'll get there.
We will indeed. All right then. Let's rank first, yes?
Yeah.
And do you want to go first?
No, especially not after that patronizing way that you just leaned into the camera and asked like I wanted a dog biscuit. No, you can go first because of that.
All right.
I'm interested to get a baseline of where I should be, which I think is where you're going to be.
Well, see, at the very least, I thought we would agree about one of these movies, and now I'm starting to think we won't agree about anything. So,
yeah,
you know,
that's why Matt did it. That's why he did it. He likes us to argue, and he knew that we were going to have differing opinions.
You think he knows us that well?
I definitely think he knows us that well. I don't know if he really likes these films and he's now sort of, he's now doing a single Denzel tear listening to this.
Glory.
Oh, that's the best one. That is the best single Denzel tear.
Oh,
I hope
sure.
Somebody caught that and then sold it on eBay.
Amazing. All right. One of these films I did not like when I first saw it in theaters.
Okay.
I took umbrage, like fist shake umbrage
yes,
to it.
That's right.
And I had sort of dismissed it. I think maybe I'd watched it one more time after release, but I don't think I'd seen it very much.
Hmm.
And after all of our time together doing God's work here on the Everything Sequel podcast, trying to sort out what does and does not work in a sequel and what we do and do not appreciate, suddenly this became my favorite movie in the series because it chooses to do things differently.
Yeah.
Than the first movie. And although I have problems within that, some of the choices that are made, I think I'll save what made me quit the movie the first time I saw it until the actual episode.
Yeah.
But only one of these movies is kind of playing around enough with the idea of doing something different. Talking about sequeldom kind of directly in an indirect sort of way that I'll also save. But also going out of its way to try and give the feeling of the first movie while doing something dramatically different altogether. And that movie is Ocean's 12.
Mm.
This is my favorite of these sequels.
Wow.
And I had a complete turnaround.
Yeah.
And by the time I finished it, I thought, wow, that's a movie was, I don't, you know, the problems I have, but like, I should have calmed down a little bit. You know, I think it was like one little thing that made me go, fuck this and check out.
I kind of want to guess what it was, but I don't want to spoil you telling us what it was.
Okay.
But I think I know. I wonder if there's a way that I can like.
Well, next episode. Well, next episode, before the you can.
Yeah. Well, but before yeah. Before oh, actually, yes, we got the next episode. But I think I'm gonna like send it to you in a message.
Okay.
And then you can tell me whether I was right or not. I don't want to say it out loud on the podcast because that feels too much like stealing your thunder. Because I'm almost certain I know what it is.
That's starting to remind me of the Mel Gibson vehicle Ransom, in which I had a roommate whose name was Kurt. And he watched the preview and said, I know who the bad guy is. And I thought, you don't know who the fucking bad guy is. Write the bad guy's name down on a piece of paper and put it in a sealed envelope for me.
Yeah.
And he wrote down Gary Sinise, put it in a fucking envelope, and I opened it up after I saw it, and I said, well, I stand corrected. Congratulations.
Wow.
Yeah.
And did he later turn out to be a magician?
He did not.
Okay. So he just correctly guessed.
Yeah.
Well, Gary Sinise had a run of surprise villain mm-hmm. roles, yeah. didn't he? He does the same in Snake Eyes.
Sure.
Yeah. Interesting. It's like, how many times is too many times for it to be a surprise? Well, I appreciate your enthusiasm and your revelations. And it makes me want to kind of reconsider some of my more hastily drawn conclusions, because I think conceptually you're onto something. I'm interested in the meta quality of Ocean's 12, but it is not the top of my list.
Oh, I'm fascinated now.
Like I said, ranking from the bottom up, what's the movie I have fewest problems with? And I think it's Ocean's 13.
Okay. I can accept that answer.
You know, it's
but well, go ahead.
It's solid. It's solidly made. It's one heist instead of 12 mini heists. I don't know how many there are, and I stopped counting.
Yeah.
In Ocean's 12, and I felt everyone was kind of calmed down a little bit and was just very much more focused.
Okay.
In their approach.
Now, you don't have a problem with going back to the casino well?
No, because...
I thought that would be something that would really bother you.
Well, no, because these...
It's casino, not doing something different. Well, we appreciate something different, don't we?
We appreciate difference when difference isn't just an unnecessary left turn. We don't like inversion for the sake of inversion either.
Okay.
And I feel like this it doesn't belong in a museum, it belongs in a casino. Actually, Ocean's 8 might be tip me closer to thinking that there's a room for a non-casino version of this than Ocean's 12. But anyway,
mm-hmm.
we'll talk about that later. But also, I got the sense, and I know this is more kind of conventional wisdom that we try and about sequels that we try and avoid on this podcast, but I couldn't help but feeling like Ocean's 13 could happily be the second movie in this reboot series with no loss to the series whatsoever. This seemed much more of a lateral move for a sequel than what they did in Ocean's 12.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the tedium of kind of reviving everything is sort of taken care of by one narrative plot point in in Ocean's 13, the idea it's like someone did something to our team and we're going to get revenge.
Yeah.
So they all come out of the woodwork. That makes way more sense to me than all the shenanigans that happen in Ocean's 12.
No, I'm see, yeah, you're going into the area of things where I'm like, well, I got problems, but
yeah. So I think that's why I don't know, I guess I can headline it now, but it will certainly surprise you to know that there's a performance in that movie that I really enjoy that I did not expect to enjoy.
Pacino?
Yes. I think it might be his best work outside of Phil Spector
in the last
30 years.
That he is Pacino-less in that movie. It's like he's playing an actual person.
I think even more than that, and I'm going to save it for when we're there, because it's too much of a digression now, but you will be surprised to learn how much I appreciated that performance.
Yeah, I did too.
So,
and
just
for the record,
top of the list.
That was my initial reaction when I first saw Ocean's 13.
Wasn't it Culture's reaction as well?
I mean,
isn't Ocean's 12 a famously derided sequel?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that doesn't mean anything. Because Temple of Doom, right? Famously derided sequel, but we both know it's quite good.
Yeah.
maybe
I can convince you, but 13, at
on
the
balance,
time I
it's
saw
quite
it,
good.
At the time I first saw it, and even now, it felt like, okay, back to form.
Uh-huh, yes.
But then, in doing this podcast and everything we've
narrative.
Talked about, you know... what do we appreciate and is different so bad? And, you know, I there are things within 12 that I'll get to when we do the episode that do make sense to me from a story structure standpoint that 3 doesn't really have. And so that was another tick in the box for me.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that. And, you know, just full disclosure, never seen Ocean's 12 or Ocean's 13 or Ocean's 8. I realize I could have just said I haven't seen any of these sequels. However, I didn't realize that until I finished saying it that was the case. So, maybe a rewatch will do something similar to me.
Interesting.
But I knew the reputation of Ocean's 12 going into it.
Yeah.
And as I was watching it, I was fighting that instinct to just
to
kind
judge
of
it
like
on
automatic,
those, yeah, on the,
to automatically
on the merits
agree.
You've already heard about.
Yeah, exactly. I was fighting that, but I came out of it with much the same feeling that, boy, this was a misfire.
Okay.
What were they all
once
thinking?
Again, my first reaction too.
Well, I mean, it's not quite the way we do ranking, but given we've got only 3, well, you're next up. You can go ahead.
Yeah, I think I partially let the cat out of the bag. I like Ocean's 13 way too much to let Ocean's 8 climb above it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I really, really enjoyed that movie when I first saw it. And it's like that movie is still comfort food to me in a way of just plop down and just have a magnificent time. Mm. It feels very akin to just sort of, you know, having a meal that you know will be good from a place you go to often. You know?
Yeah, it's quite. It's complacent in a pleasing way.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so it's second on my list. Which puts Ocean's 8 at the bottom of my list.
Yeah.
And Ocean's 8, I think, is polarizing. I know a lot of people that hate Ocean's 8, and I know a lot of people that like it quite a bit and think it was great fun.
Hmm. Well, I'm not going to commit to either of those. But
neither am
however,
I, not right
I
now.
Say,
you noticed I stayed silent after finishing that remark.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give away too much yet.
But even in my ranking, I'm not going to commit to that because it's second on my list.
I knew it would be.
Well, how did you know it would be?
Just as we started talking, as you started finishing talking about Ocean's 13, I said...
Sort of say that about anything,
there's
though.
There's no way Ocean's 12 is going to be next. It's the bottom of his list.
Yeah, and it's interesting that because I'm different from most filmgoers in that there's these polarizing movies that people take one or other view of, and normally when I see those polarizing movies, I think it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I don't understand why people can't split the difference.
Right.
You know, there's a movie that's in our near future that I feel exactly the same about, which is a famously polarizing movie. And I'm just sort of like, it's about in the middle. And I kind of feel that way about Ocean's 8. Like, I like a lot of what's behind it. I think the execution of it is
middling,
probably overall unsuccessful. Boy, do I love that cast.
Oh, yeah.
That cast is exceptional.
Mm-hmm.
As they are in all of these movies. I'm not saying that it's at any of the other movies' expense, but I was really struck by how little fun I would be having if I did not like these actors.
Okay.
Like, at every turn, I was like... And almost to the point where... It's almost like they tried to get the worst possible men to be in the movie to point out just how great the female cast is.
Yeah, but, right.
So it's second on my list.
Which puts 12 at the bottom.
Yeah, I've never got problems. I've never seen a movie that feels to me more like supplementary material. Like, even Blue in the Face, you know, the movie that they improvised, the sequel that they improvised on the set of Smoke, still feels more official than this. If you'd have told me that this film was if you'd told me that this movie was partially filmed at the rap party of Ocean's 11, and then actors went and filmed scenes in the weekend after they wrapped Ocean's 11, I'd be like, sure, that's exactly what it looks like.
Yeah, it does. I completely understand if you thought that somebody was having an improv party and said, okay, you're Danny Ocean and you're Linus, you're in a room and you got to talk about a Fabergé egg. Go.
Quite, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's in a lot of hotel rooms, so it's almost like, well, George Clooney's flight doesn't leave until late Sunday night. as long as no one has to be in a scene together, we could turn this into a movie.
You know, so this is perfect. This is perfect because everything that you're saying is everything I felt the first time I saw it. I hated this movie the first time I saw it.
Yeah.
And I have done a complete 180.
Yeah. And I'm fascinated to know why. Because, I was fighting confirmation bias, but I had that bias confirmed.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you can't call this a movie. You know, this is refundably bad.
So, you have let the cat out of the bag about how you feel on the good bad note.
I have, except to say that the part I object to, I think I've said this before on the podcast, but it's the movie part that makes it a bad movie. It's the fact that it's not a movie that makes it a bad movie. not necessarily what happens in it, although I think the quality of that is variable. But I don't think they should be allowed to get away with releasing this as a film.
I don't like my chances. for talking you off the ledge. I'll do my best.
And, you know, partly as well, like, I became increasingly, as it went on, I became increasingly irritated by how Soderbergh was kind of stylistically stitching it together. Because he's a great film stylist,
mm-hmm.
but this was clearly a movie where basically that was assembled in the editing room, or, you know, with shot selection. It's not a movie that holds together in any other way. And there's even moments where it's like, well, if you have the same shot in the same scene, if you have the same kind of a shot in the same scene consistently throughout the movie, they might think that this is somehow coherent and consistent. But the extreme of that is like Battlefield Earth, where, you know, the movie, that every scene begins with exactly the same transition, like every single scene in the film. And that's what it started to remind me of. I'm like, you know, stylistic consistency is good, but it's got to be in aid of something other than this movie doesn't hang together. Let's have at least one through line and we can use the stylistic power of the director to kind of
stitch
it all. Anyway, I don't know. So yeah, I think it's a bad movie.
Well, I can
cut... In summary...
I can cut to the chase. I'm willing to say all three of these movies are good.
Okay. Well, I am not willing to say that. So okay,
I think
one is
closer to bad than the others, and that's the movie at the bottom of my list, and that's Ocean's 8. And then also
the risk of upsetting you and by extension Matt, I think all of these movies are bad.
Of course.
No, not of course. Because I just, none of them.
You just can't accept fun.
I can't accept fun. I also can't accept, like, not to say that all of these sequels are great, but I'm trying to think about when you've turned a kind of heist caper into a film series, what have you done with it before? And you need to do something else in order to prolong them as a film series. Like the Pink Panther movies were like, okay.
Oh, so I think Ocean's 12 does that, and then Ocean's 13 drops the ball.
On coming up with a reason why we should keep making these movies and by extension watching them.
No, well, maybe that's that's too much credit, maybe. Like, I feel like I want to save it. I want to save this argument.
Sorry, I lost
like, till
you
we
there.
Get to each film.
I lost you there, Mike. Sorry. I don't know if you want to go back in. You were totally frozen on my end.
You were a little bit frozen on mine. I just thought you'd catch up. What's the last thing you heard?
The last thing...
What's the last thing you heard?
My voice saying something. Probably indefensible.
I remember that.
I know. I had to narrow it down. Just whatever you just said after I stopped talking. You say
what I was saying was that I think Ocean's 12 does something narratively that makes sense for a next movie in the series that Ocean's 13 never picks up and actually kind of abandons, but that maybe I should save it for the individual episodes.
No, I think I think we're polar opposites on that.
Okay.
Because there's dropping the ball, and then there's, let me get that ball from you. You are not trained in this sport.
You're not supposed to swallow the ball.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're going to do some damage to yourself if you don't let me have this ball right now. But I also see the limit, because I've said they're all bad. I also see the limitations of sort of doing a familiar kind of retread of Ocean's 11 as well. I think that is also boring and lazy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's enough keep. It's the top of my list because there's enough keeping me interested as the movie goes on. But apart from that, I wouldn't burn 2 hours on it if I was given the choice again.
Oh yeah, I.
But it's comfort food for you.
I think 13 is the most watchable.
Hmm. Yeah, so I'm not really enamored with any of them. I don't think Ocean...
You sourpuss. How dare you? Why don't you just sit down, have yourself some Reese's Pieces mixed in with the popcorn and just have a fucking good time?
Yeah, but I need something to do that with. And the problem with Ocean's 8 for me as well, it's just a very poorly directed movie.
Just that I agree with, yeah.
And it's really noticeable because the cast is working at a totally different level.
Yeah.
So that imbalance is what, to me, makes it a bad movie, even though
the cast is what makes it good for me. Because I think they're so utterly watchable that I can enjoy all of them together. But you're right in the sense of, as a film, the way it's directed... music in that movie I have a real big problem with.
Yeah.
And, it's barely a good movie. But likewise, 13 in my ranking, real close.
Sure. Yeah. Well,
and I fully admit that the next time I watch these movies, I could flip-flop again.
Go flip-ya for real.
Flip-ya. Flip you for real.
Yeah. So it's interesting. But I think the other part of why I put Ocean's 8 above Ocean's 12 is that by the end of Ocean's 13, you needed a movie like Ocean's 8 because Ocean's 13 is a terribly misogynistic movie that's almost screaming out for a gender flipped reboot of the series, rehabilitation of the series, I should say. I think they should be ashamed of some of the content of that movie. Mm-hmm. Looking back, I know I would be. So there's that as well. Like I respond warmly to what Ocean 8 is trying to do, not just in how it redresses the gender balance of the series, but also how it there's it's co-written by a woman, and I think you can really tell there's like certain scenes in the movie that seem to reflect the real lives of women and what they go through on a daily basis.
Sure. Yeah.
So I really appreciate that, but I just don't think it adds up as a whole movie.
All right.
None of these do, actually. And they're long. They're all long. I'm surprised you haven't mentioned that yet.
I'm happy that all these movies clock in around 2 hours.
What's happened to you?
No, what I...
2 hours?
What I mean is, I think...
You get angry if a movie goes over 90 minutes. 2 hours?
What I mean is... Because it's Steven Soderbergh and because the first one worked,
sure,
it feels like they could have really indulged themselves, especially on that second movie. And they do in terms of like how much it's filled.
Yeah.
But it's not a 2 hour and 40 minute movie. And I feel like that could have happened easily. So.
Yeah. No, I
appreciate that much restraint.
That's a depressing thought, but you're dead on. When popular movies can easily be closer to 3 hours than two,
yeah,
2 hours becomes the new 90 minutes.
Right.
But it's still 2 hours.
Yeah.
It's like the it's like the Trump W. Bush argument. He was no better a president just because Trump came after him.
No, but I do appreciate that he was a real person.
But I don't know. To me, it makes no difference. Just because someone comes along is worse, which is how history works, by the way.
Sure.
The next guy is always worse. It's like, still really fucked up.
No, I agree. I think he was really fucked up, but I would take his fucked up over the Trump fucked up.
I still wouldn't.
Any day of the week.
I don't want any of it.
No, you don't want any of it. But what I'm saying, the choice is, sir, you can elect only one president, and it's George W. Bush or Trump. Who do you want to be elected?
I'd rather Trump, because that's going to fall apart. Quicker. It'll fall apart quicker. Categorically.
He's gonna make it through the 4 years. What do you mean fall apart?
That was a surprise. Yeah. The problem is, this time if he gets reelected, then society will literally fall apart.
Alright, so this is not what people come to this podcast for.
That's exactly what people turning on an episode of a podcast about sequels that is based around the Ocean series have come to hear, Mike. What are you talking about?
Old men yell at politics.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you have it. I mean,
yeah,
we are fairly diametrically opposed. Completely, right? Our order is completely different. Mm-hmm. My top is your bottom.
Yeah, I don't like how you phrase that.
Yeah, but yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Let's just keep tops and bottoms.
The second
out
I left my
guy.
Mouth, I said that sounded weird. sounded like the beginning of an episode from Euphoria.
I've never seen a Euphoria, and still I know that's funny. That's how good that joke is.
Yeah, our middles are different. We both have blanket good bad statements. I'm blanket good, and you're blanket bad. We're gonna have a good time. We're really gonna have a good time.
This is. Whenever one of us has gone to an extreme, the other one has taken up a fairly moderate position. This is the first time we've gone diametric.
And yet, there's still consensus within all of our choices, or at least your choices with me. I don't know about my choices with you, but
yeah.
I understand all of your choices. And at one point in my life, I thought the same. So
it's a two-way street. What you're talking about is something I'm very interested in. I'm just not interested in it in the context of this particular movie.
Yeah. All right.
Or, you know, media.
That was cool. Your lip managed to curl up in a sneer.
I mean, couldn't they have just, like, had it as like a DVD extra on the Ocean's 11 disc, like a bonus disc. Here's Ocean's 12.
All right,
watch it if you want. If you don't want to watch it, no big loss.
Let's save it for the episode. It's coming up next.
Okay, we will.
All we need from you, dear listeners, is to know what you think. So you're on the clock, Aldrich. Which of these movies is the top of your list, huh?
No, he's just going to sit back and enjoy the madness. While he drinks a Negroni.
Find us on Facebook. Find us on Instagram. Find us nowhere else. Send an email to everythingsequel@gmail.com. Which of these movies tops your list? Are these movies good or bad? We must know. That's it. When you hear us next, we're talking Ocean's 12, the most divisive movie in the series, clearly, for the two of us.
And, you know, this might be the only time that we're going to have more more normal people agreeing with me than agreeing with you.
That's possible. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm excited. That's it.
Me too.
For Tom Stewart of Lonesome Whistle Productions, Michael Shantz here of the How Dare You Awards. As promised, we will be back next time with Ocean's 12. Say goodbye to everybody, Tom.
It's like a flight to nowhere without any peanuts. You remember that fashion show based around air travel?
Yes.
Some good satire in that film.
Yeah.
Of the fashion industry and
it's one of the few well-directed moments too, because he's actually capturing the looks of people as the models walk down the runway in a way that's honest and comedic.
Now I'm starting to think maybe Gary Ross is the same Ross of Ross Dress for Less.
That's how he got into that scene. He hooked in.
Yeah, that's it. He's trying to take down the labels.
Perfect. All right. We'll be back.
I like to think I know something about beer. But nowadays, even I get overwhelmed when confronted by the exhaustive selection of craft beers they have at bars, breweries, and even grocery stores. Back in the day, you had one, maybe two craft beers to choose from, and if you were confused, you ordered a Guinness. But in beer destinations like San Diego, the craft beer options lately are in double, sometimes even triple, digits. So what's a beer drinker to do? You need what I need. The Vegas Beer Guys. Your beer of choice should be a perfect blend of malt and hops. And so a live show about beer needs that same balance. And the Vegas Beer Guys matches beer expert Dan Aker with self-proclaimed beer novice Stephen J. Weiss. The results are eminently drinkable. They're on Facebook. They're on Instagram. They'll try new beers. They'll tell you about beer. Think of them as your beer Sherpas guiding you up a foamy-headed mountain to reach the peak of your pint. God, I need a beer.